Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Shope.
Where's my punch?
And the Bulldog.
Punch? Who drinks the punch? Punch is horrible. Is punch good? Who likes punch?
On WGR.
Big frothy like bowl. It's never cold enough. It's bad. Punch is bad.
Fruit floating in it.
Punch is terrible. Punch is a terrible idea. Get a bar and just get it together.
Sports Radio 550.
Actually, I think I see more pictures of drinks with fruit floating in them than I used to. And I've even contributed to this. I don't know if I've taken pictures.
Yeah.
But just orange juice, you drop a strawberry or a blueberry or two in there.
I'm not against that. I just don't like the big bowl with some, like, soaked orange slices floating around in there, and there's a ladle.
I think you're anti-ladle.
I mean, I don't like the punch idea. I'm all right with like rum punch in individual servings, fine. You're putting it on a buffet table and asking teenagers to go get that? No.
I mean, you say teenagers because adults are there drinking other things and the punch is there for them?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, just not. I stand by every word of that. But I'm all right. You want to throw some fruit in something else? You're going to bring me a drink and there's going to be some fruit in it?
What about beer?
Fine.
Have you graduated to that? Did you ever step over there?
No, I never did. I just drink straight up beer that has fruit flavors in it.
Is that better?
There's no fruit actually floating in it. But yeah,
there's a difference, huh?
I think so.
What is the best drink?
Ooh. The best drink?
Like, I like an old-fashioned, and there's fruit in that. You'll have muddled cherries in that, an orange peel, perhaps. Even better when, like, it's been lit with a blowtorch. A little smokiness.
Okay, yeah.
I like that drink a lot.
Yeah.
Are olives fruit? There's
sure
seeds, pits.
Sure.
Maybe they're fruit. So martinis. So.
Yeah, okay.
I'm too lazy for the olives at home for the martini.
I don't bother. I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite cocktail. I never really have had a favorite cocktail. No.
You never go there.
I'm not. I mean, it's not, you know, it's just not something I often think to do if I'm out somewhere. Like, usually I'm out places where they're going to have some variety of beer on, you know, stocked that I'm going to really like. So I gravitate to those kinds of places.
But how many can you drink? Like, what? It depends on the day for me. If it's midday and you think it's going to be a night, or say I do, if it's the middle of the day and the night is starting early for whatever reason, there's a party.
Yeah.
So it's like 3 o'clock maybe, or even earlier, probably like, let's say 3 o'clock. And you've got everything. You're an open bar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to drink beer there because if I do, I think by 4:30, I'll have had two, maybe, 4:30. I'm not fast, so 4:30, I'll have had two. And I don't really
What time do we start again?
Three? You're faster than me.
Yeah.
At beer, you're faster than me.
Yeah.
So, like, 4:30, I don't want a third one.
Well, the day for me to think about this is the day, it really, almost any Saturday in the summer is this for me. Because, you know, there could be people dropping by, but like the big day that comes to mind is whenever we have a party every year at the cottage, and that is going to be a long day, and it's very tempting when you're the one in charge of coordinating the beer. You know, that starts in the morning, and it's loading up coolers and getting bags of ice and like doing all that. It's really easy at 10:30 in the morning to go, it looks pretty good.
Why not?
Right? That looks pretty good.
That's right. Right. That's a different one.
Right. But and that is going to be a day that is not ideally going to end until 10, 11, midnight at the beach with a fire and the whole thing.
But so you can just keep going all day?
No. What I used to, but And this predates really craft beer for me, which are generally, bigger. Not always, but bigger.
Yeah, like,
although plenty of session ales are going to be 4.5, 5, and like you can manage that. That's not that far off from like a regular traditional Labatt Blue or whatever. But I like the bigger beers. So if I start at say 3, I've learned over the years that like 10:30 in the morning, not a good idea. It's too long. It's too much. But have a few. People start arriving, mix in water for a little while. I'm going to be called on to probably cook some part of dinner on the grill. And like there's a water break in there. So I have a couple in the afternoon, take a break, and then after dinner, sort of get back to it.
I think in a day like that, if it's a marathon, as long as you're just like 2-1 or 1-1 with the beer and the water, then you can go.
Yeah.
But I don't like a third or especially a fourth beer because now I'm just like, I feel gross.
Yeah, no, I'm at that I've learned, I've matured to the point where I know that that's going to mess me up.
So on a 3 o'clock outing, beer runs its course. And wine is the one that's never good early in the day. Like wine is the one, if you have a full Saturday or Sunday, you know, whatever, wine is never, that never works for me before dinner. Like yeah. Never.
Yeah.
So what's the, like a gin and tonic in the summer? Here's one. So let's say you're on a flight to Florida at 7 in the morning on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get to the... Get,
I've
get
never to... had a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Well,
I've never had one.
Get over it.
I don't want a drink I've never had as I'm getting on a plane.
Okay.
So...
Well...
So that's out. For okay. In this case, that's out.
Well, then have some vodka and orange juice.
Yeah.
Fine.
Right. You really need the orange juice at that point?
No, but I mean, you know, I'm just trying to get you a little buffer there. That's all.
These airport bars are always open, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
They're ready for you.
They better
at
be.
At 6 in the morning, they're ready for you, aren't they?
I'm getting on a plane. I need something.
I think they're ready for you.
There's no question.
Sometime recently, I was getting on a flight, and I was like, maybe this was this trip last year and left on a Saturday morning or something and sort of noticed that the bar was open. At like a really early hour,
mm-hmm.
and my wife was like, "Of course it is!
Right,
the bar at the airport is always open.
Right.
It's like a casino, I guess."
We last January when we took this trip to Costa Rica, you know, it's 20 people, 10 couples. I barely know most of them. I know one couple really well. The others maybe I've met a couple times, and then the majority of them are almost complete strangers, right? And we're not all sitting together or anything, but we leave Buffalo at 5 a.m. maybe to fly to Fort Lauderdale. That's
right.
The first stop. So we're in Fort Lauderdale at, you know, what
eight.
Is it, 8, 8:30, whatever.
It's 3 hours.
And we've got, you know, not a lot of time, but a couple hours to kill. And sure enough, like there's the bar, and I'm like,
oh, well,
I'm with my wife, I'm going, like, we're going to the bar.
That's different, too.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, let's go.
I think that's different, too. Because if you are going from here to Fort Lauderdale to Costa Rica, when you are at that airport in Fort Lauderdale, you are on vacation.
Yes.
Like, you are already there.
Yes.
And, you know, you're getting on another plane and you're flying right. for 2 more hours or whatever that is, but are already there.
This is not the exactly correct answer because it really kind of skips the theme of, like, what's the best drink? The best drink is the drink you have at that bar. You are midway to the tropics and you know you're not coming back for, like, 9 days. That whatever you're having at that bar, turns out I had a Bloody Mary, that's the best drink. Perfect.
Yeah. That's the best drink that has celery in it, I would say.
It's just delicious.
Probably the best one. Horseradish.
And as it turned out, I think we were the only couple in the group that went to the bar.
Whatever.
But that did not turn out to be any kind of a bad sign for the way the week went. I mean, it was
badge of honor.
Everybody went after it pretty good. So anyway,
I'll report back with what the Buffalo Airport bar is like at like 6 on Saturday morning.
Right.
Or 5:45. I want to get there. Be in all the way in by 6. So I'll let you know what that scene is. I've been to that bar a couple times, not that early. They have super big beers there.
Yeah.
Like 32-ounce beers or something. Like they're just ready for it. They know their audience.
They know, right.
They know what's up. Well, you know, this, I guess, maybe on even a subconscious level is some effort to avoid repeating yesterday's show. I mean, The door is open for more fans to open up about our lives, our sports lives here. I mean, that's really what I think the last week or so or more, month even, of the Sabres has brought out. And there's a lot of that layered in our frustration, our conversation about them yesterday and this week is like, I know how young Mittelstadt is. I'm 47. I mean, I know. I get it. I understand. You're young. You want to be patient. The Bills, too. I mean, I know. But especially, this is not an excuse, especially when you're talking about it every day, there is a point at which you just don't care anymore about how old the guys were, or more so, what their record was a year ago. I mean, that was really yesterday. The problem that I had is, like, it's one thing for you and I or callers to sort of compare this season to last season for the Sabres or whatever, even for the Bills. Like, the Bills' record got a lot worse this year from last season, but, like, most people I talked to didn't mind, which, you know, okay. But, you know, yesterday, right now, with the Sabres is, and then you had the GM alluding to it. It's one thing for us to do it and try to put some sort of perspective into it. For him to do it, for me, was disappointing. Because I don't want the Sabres even thinking of that. I don't want Jason Botterill even thinking about their record compared to last year. Does he have a good team? Does he have good players? Does he have players that other teams might think are good, but he doesn't? Like, that's really, isn't that everything in this job? Like, you're the GM, it seems like a big job. It probably pays great, but that's really it. The job is being able to determine those things. However you do it, you want to use numbers, you want to use, if you get it right, I don't care if you want to shun the statistics. As long as you get it right, you end up with a winning team, then you can say, you got scoreboard. You say whatever you want. But that hasn't happened here in forever. So I don't really want to hear we're better than last year, you know, because what's that worth? So, you know, we all have, most of us have a long period of time waiting for this. He doesn't. He's got not even 2 years yet. He wasn't even here 2 years ago. He doesn't care about that. Maybe he doesn't know about it even necessarily. But we have that. And so that's a real thing. That's a real emotion. It's a real reaction. It's perfect, in my opinion, it's perfectly defensible and justifiable. Is it always what it should be when you're analyzing them objectively and trying to chart what they should do, in your opinion, what they should do? No, because, you know, it's just the person, the people who run it really shouldn't be affected by that.
No.
This is all just to say only two things. It's all just to say, wake me up when it's over.
Yeah, right.
And I just hope the Sabres aren't complacent.
This is, that's what, I don't often find myself, I mean, despite the, you know, the demands, if that's not too strong, of this job, dwelling on news conferences that any of the people who run these teams have for more than a day or so. But I'm still sort of really bothered by the tone that Botterill struck. I mean, on one hand, I made this, I think, pretty clear yesterday, I don't mind what he had to say about his coach, because I think there is perhaps likely a message in there to his team about the coach, and I don't mind him standing up for that. But to wave the flag of progress with 23 games to go in a season that has seen his team not win back-to-back games since the middle of December is it's just not the right tone. Like, I don't need him throwing bombs at a bunch of 20-year-olds because they're not delivering. But I also don't want just acceptance of, oh, well, you know, it's really hard. I found myself today thinking about Dick Geron. It's hard to win games in our league.
I thought you were about to say that.
It's hard to win games in our league. That to me, like, Dick Geron might mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. To me, it's him saying, it's really hard to win games in our league, which was condescending because it's our league and you wouldn't understand. You know, you're not in our league. You don't understand what it's like over here. But also just settling for, you know, giving your team basically an out. And that's – I just don't think Bottrell struck the right note at all yesterday. And he doesn't have to be sitting with us feeling the frustration of 8 years, 50 years, whatever, our lifetimes, our angst. Fine. But you should have some idea of how much fun. I mean, he sat with us in the throes of that winning streak. He knew what that was like and what that felt like for everyone. And I think you should have some respect for that.
Well, I think about that. I think that he is still pretty young at this. And he might not care about this point I'm about to make. He might not. I might be able to put this right in front of his face and be like, yeah, it's really not what matters to me. He is their number one instinct or thought, coaches, GMs, players, when taking those kind of questions is each other. Their number one thought is not honesty. We know that. So, I mean, they lie all the time. It's not honesty. It's not like, what kind of note am I striking, as you put it? It's protection. It's making sure I protect the people that work for me. Because if I don't do that, I'm going to have a problem at work. I might have a problem out there the other way. But what matters more to me is protecting. This is totally sports. Absolutely hockey.
It's easier to turn off the problem out there. Like, you don't have to pay attention to it if you don't want to.
And you can condescend to it. Like, well, what, you know, those guys are always negative.
Right.
Right? What are the fans? You'll be, like, it's always Boomer Esiason for me. Boomer Esiason with this, you know, line. You start listening to the fans, you'll be one of them. Or you'll be right more often, but, you know, whatever. So, I think that is the top, that is the prevailing thought or instinct when you're doing that, is I got to make sure, and you don't even think about it when you're saying it. Like, I could do it for you. Ask me a question. I can be the GM of the Bills or the Sabres. I'll know what to say, you know, if I'm them, because then, like, I haven't started a fire. And so I think, like, that's where where his head is at. Like, what I said at the beginning was, if I, like, put that to him, like, isn't this right? He might say, yeah. I don't know. Like, he might say, yeah. He might admit it. So he's not, still, though, striking a note. You want him to be, you know, what? Not mad or upset necessarily, but just sort of like aware.
Like, raise the standard a little bit.
Well, right.
For your team.
If it's really right. For me, it's still an if. If it's really right that the standard is low, that what yesterday's press conference revealed was that the standard is really low and they're talking about in games, if that's really right, that's bad. And that's what you're saying, and that's how I felt yesterday most of the day, which, like, that's really bad. You should know at least not to say that. But maybe he's saying it because he, more than anything else, is concerned with not offending anybody that works for him. So anyway, like, that might sound like an excuse for him. I'm certainly not trying to make one.
No, I mean, I get, you know.
That's really, the thing really is, did he show us that they think life is good because they're better than last year and because they're still in a playoff, they still have a chance at it with whatever, how many weeks left? Is that what he revealed? I don't know as fact if that's
right,
what he revealed.
Sure. I don't either. And his motivation could be, could what you just described could very well be behind what sort of, commentary he wants to lend to the discourse. So I get that, and I want to have a healthy respect for it, but I think it's just too careful. It's just too cautious. And maybe that's just his personality. You know, he is definitely not Tim Murray. But it remains he is stewarding a team that has not won back-to-back games in regulation since October. I mean, that is incredible. That is incredible.
That's really hard to describe as progress.
Yeah.
No matter what
that's
used
it.
To be.
So, I want ultimately for the core group of this team that I think is not really going anywhere. Well, I mean, to some degree, that Jack, Reinhardt, Mittelstadt, Dahlin, I need the organization to be careful with them. Like, I don't want them getting shattered. But, oh my gosh, win some hockey games. Like, dig in a little bit here. That's not too much to ask.
It might be tonight.
Sure. Sure. And that's why you need to dig in against the Rangers and against the Devils and against the Panthers, because games like today are going to be coming with a team that is just annihilating people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's unwinnable, but it's about as hard as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, there is no better team in the league. And I don't know, maybe if we'll see where they end up historically for a regular season here, but to be sitting here with 96 points with 21 games to go, that's where Tampa's at right now. They've played 61 already.
Yep.
I mean, they're in record-setting territory.
The 120s. Like the 120s for points.
Yep.
All right, here's Brian with us. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. A couple times I've heard from, you know, the GM and the players in the locker room regarding that the second half of the season, teams are clamping down and they're harder to play against, and which would, to me, make it kind of seem like an excuse for why the team is losing more games. My question is that necessarily true? I mean, I saw there was a 7-6 hockey game the other night.
8-7.
Senators. And then, you know, also, you know, the winning percentage of the NHL is 50%. The first half of the season, it's 50%. And the second half of the season, if it's getting harder for us, it's getting easier for some other team.
Good point.
Well, I don't know what that necessarily tells us, but I'm curious to hear what you say.
The only thing I know about first half versus second half is that there are fewer penalties later on. As seasons go along, there are fewer penalties. You know, the rest of it is more just subjective or even cliche, that harder to win. You know, players talk like this. Certain reporters always talk like this. But it doesn't, like, prove it. I'm not sure. I'm not here to be able to prove it or disprove it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a thing I walk around with. The only thing I know is that penalties go down. But really, that could be the whole point. If that is the point, that should be said as the point.
It's going to be harder to score goals. You're going to have to pay a bigger price. I think of it almost more as just sort of, I think it is pretty cliched, but I also think that there's something to be said for players feeling as though the games matter more, like the standings. We're trying to determine, if you go along through a season and you're hovering around a playoff spot and it tightens up and Philly catches you and Carolina passes you, and now it's really, I really need points. Are we going to do this or not? You're going to put more pressure, I think, on yourself, which can work for you or can be your biggest enemy, because you might really get tense about it. I think that case to case, player to player, team to team can be a thing, but I don't have any way to measure it for you.
Hey, if you're following all this and you're interested in it, give us a call with your thoughts if you've got something interesting to say. 803-0550, that's Jason Botterill's remarks, that's Phil Housley's status, that's the trade deadline Monday, that's the season overall, the future, all of it. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, Rob Ray at 4, pregame at 6:30 for Sabres and Lightning here on WGR.
We work on things, and then somehow we're not doing it in the game, so we need to be better at it. The game starts at 7, and you know, we have 3 periods, so we need to play the same way.
Larson?
Dahlin?
Ullmark? Sobotka. He scored, so we got him. All right.
That was a horrible job.
By us?
Yeah. I felt like Swedish. I thought I was getting a sweet, and like he's not Swedish.
Where is he from? Czech?
I think he's Slovakian.
Is he? Sorry for not knowing.
He's from the Czech Republic.
Okay.
When he was born,
I'm sorry
though,
for you not knowing.
Although when he was born, it would have been Czechoslovakia. So I think you're both right.
No, that is not. No, you're just being way too nice right there. Did my brother-in-law said that the
right, it's way off.
The Rangers goalie from the game against the Rangers here,
Georgiev.
Yeah, is the only Bulgarian NHL player ever.
Hmm.
I haven't looked that up, but he said that was the case.
No, all right, I haven't either.
I think that's probably right because, you know, once upon a time when I used to play the NHL video game a lot, they have all the international teams in there. And when I say all, like they have a ton of countries.
Yes.
And we used to do these tournaments where you'd have to play as the bad teams, and definitely Bulgaria never had an NHL player that I ever recognized.
So maybe this Georgiev, the Ranger goalie, is the first. Brian is with us. Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys. I think one thing that the second half of the season tests as well as your depth. So when injuries pile up, you know, how deep of a roster?
Sure.
Do you have? Mm-hmm. On to the main point of, you know, the state of our organizations. I think part of it is, and what's frustrating for me is I see it in the organization, and I definitely see it in the fans, is they've declared a war on talent in this town. I mean, we can go back through all the people the Bills have let go, and I get it. You can't keep them all. But I think the Sabres to some degree as well. If you're talent, then, you know, you could be possibly a cancer. You could be a distraction. You see it with Antonio Brown. It gets mentioned. Not even if the Bills would realistically do it, but it's dismissed out of hand because, well, he's a cancer. Look at how it left Pittsburgh. They're in trouble because of him. And it's like that guy, if he joined the Bills, would become the best Bills wide receiver ever to put on a uniform out in terms of talent, in terms of production-wise. And but you can't say that because, well, that goes against the team-first narrative. And I think what happens is you're constantly looking for the future all the time. Draft picks become the goal. We're more interested in how many draft picks we can acquire and accumulate than we are talented players. So, great, you got rid of O'Reilly, and that didn't work. And you don't have Kane either. And so I think that's what Tim Murray, that's probably the difference that you see already, is he went for it. He tried to speed up this rebuild, and okay, you didn't pick the right players, I guess, but clearing them out just prolongs this, and now you're into year two and year three, and this is where you always get to, and now reality's starting to slap you in the face. You get three more years to execute your five-year plan?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. What do you think of that?
I think it holds more true of what the Bills have done. You know, I think contract situations play into what you're doing here. Trading Skinner for Kane for all intents and purposes. Like, you could have kept Kane and paid him 7 for 50 or something. And you're going to do – it's going to cost more for Skinner than that probably, but not by a lot. And, like, I'm okay there. I don't think there's a war on talent on the Sabres. Ryan O'Reilly was not the most talented player on the Sabres. He was an effective, good, very useful player, but not the most talented player. The most talented player on the Sabres is probably Rasmus Dahlin. He just got here. He's not going anywhere. Jack Eichel's right behind. He's not going anywhere. I think with the football team, I think it's a much more reasonable case to make.
There is a portion of the fan base that will criticize Eichel and eventually, if not already, Dahlin, because they're not like lunch bucket, you know, that
sure.
they won't even understand.
I get that.
Their value, sure. Or their yeah. Talent, but that doesn't really matter to me. Like, that there's always some fringes. I mean, on the fringes, there's always kind of, there were some
sure.
opinions that are out there.
There, yeah,
what
I mean,
the team thinks matters.
Right. And they paid Jack Eichel because he's talented. And they perhaps divested themselves of Ryan O'Reilly because they didn't think they could coexist together, he and Eichel. On some level, I think, like, that's at the heart of what happened there. So you chose the younger, more talented guy, and you had to pay him more than you were paying Ryan O'Reilly. So I don't think it really lines up. I mean,
but trading O'Reilly, as far as I'm concerned, trading O'Reilly qualifies as a culture move.
Oh, yes.
What culture is, you know, it's always described maybe a little bit differently, but what it is you want harmony. You want professionalism. You want you know, to avoid infighting. All these things are just like, just you can use the same terms to describe the same thing over and over. And so that's why you did that. The Sabres, I think, would never have argued that O'Reilly as a hockey player was deficient.
No.
So hopefully they never said that.
No.
So that's what you were doing there, and I guess for a while, probably in places, there was the argument that it worked because they were winning in shootouts. They're winning. Look how happy they are. Right. And what would I have always said to that? They're happy because they won. They didn't win because they're happy. They're happy because they won. So now you're here, and like I don't really want to just sort of flick everybody who talks about that behind the ears, because I don't bring this up all the time. Just right now, we're under the hood on this team. That's what's happening right mm-hmm. now. Collectively, we're under the hood on this team. Like, so just tell me where you think we're at with that. Because I'm sure if I looked, I'm sure I could find plenty of congratulatory, self-congratulatory comments from players on the Sabres, including Eichel, I assume, in November about how they were better and getting along great. And these maybe they were hints or maybe they were blunt. But I'm sure that was being mm-hmm. thought about. And now I'm in February and I'm looking like I'm out of it. And, you know, what was it worth it?
Right. And how is that going?
If Ryan O'Reilly were on this team instead of Thompson, Sobotka, and Berglund, would they really be worse?
I can't imagine that.
How would they be worse? Right? They would just show, it would be 7 o'clock and somebody would report the Sabres aren't here yet. I mean, like, how would they really be worse than this? There is a draft pick. I'm not like trying to scrutinize the trade to the fullest extent here.
Right.
But you wanted to do that to fix your room. And presumably you did. One guy quit.
Right. That didn't happen. I mean, it did and didn't. I don't know. It depends. I mean, once he got here and wasn't producing, it helped. But the idea was that you were going to get some production from those two guys. Like, yes, the big part of the, you know, the reason you took them is to take the money. But I think you were assuming a certain level of production, and you've gotten nothing. And, yeah, one guy quit. So, yeah.
Well, war on talent is quite a way to put that. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't think to put it like that. But, I mean, it's like I agree with what you said first, which was, like, I think of the Bills in this way. But, you know, of course there are lots of players and there are lots of good ones. They just, you know, sort of throw out ones that they think are maybe disruptive or too expensive. You know, there's a scale maybe for mm-hmm. guys like the best players who make the most money on down, and the ones who are at the top of that might be considered to be doing the most damage if they can't line up properly. You know, Darius is maybe the best example for that. If he can't line up properly, stay in line, you know, is a better way to say
right,
it.
Right, right.
Then the Bills, I think this is so. The Bills felt that was going to have or having a negative effect on the team overall, which, you know.
Right, and I think that the Sabres obviously reached the same conclusion about O'Reilly, because there was almost no way, and this was conceded by anyone who championed the idea of him being a trade piece. It was, you know, logistically it fit. It was really the only, I thought it was the only move they had if they were going to do something to try to change their room. I'm assuming that they exhausted all avenues to try to find a way to make that work with him as a part of the team. Because there was no way you were going to convince me that you were going to get better in the short term by trading him away. Like, there was no, like, you weren't going to replace his points with what you were acquiring in his place. Asking Casey Mittelstadt to do that was going to be a pretty heavy lift. That was also plainly obvious, at least to me, my opinion. I mean, it didn't have to be right. He could have exceeded expectations, but he hasn't. So I guess I admit that as dubious as certain decisions may be, I trust that they had in their minds, no, look, we can't, this isn't going to work. This group of players with O'Reilly in the middle of it isn't, we're not going to be as good as we can possibly be until we address that. So they did. And they miss him. There's no arguing that. I mean, the production that he's had in St. Louis.
The organization might. Maybe certain players don't, but the organization
right,
might.
Right,
Okay. Golf is on. We're in Mexico?
Yes, Mexico City.
Did you know that the huge favorite to win Best Picture at the Oscars Sunday night is a Netflix movie about a maid in Mexico City in the 70s?
I did not know that.
Do you know any of this?
No.
I believe it would be the first, or maybe is the first nominee to have never been in a movie theater.
Okay.
Netflix.
I didn't know you could even do that.
I didn't either. I said that yesterday to Joe. Like, I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't know that was allowed.
But Roma is the name of the movie. Odds-wise, I saw it today, it is 2-9 to win Best Picture, which like they know it's going to win.
I really have no excuse for not seeing that then.
I really never heard of it until the other day. Subtitles, I believe.
Never really heard of it until just now, but I have Netflix, so I mean, I could, you know.
But how about that? Like, the Oscars are Sunday night.
Right.
And there are more nominees than there used to be, like twice as many. Like, there are 10 now. Used to be five, now they're 10.
I'm supposed to know 10? Wow.
And this is the heavy favorite to win, and it's on Netflix. It's a Netflix movie. And I think it's in Spanish. I think it's subtitled, but I haven't. And I don't know for sure.
It would take me a good 5 years to see 10 movies. I really don't. I don't think I see 2 movies a year anymore.
Like new ones.
New ones. My kids are old enough now that I don't need to go to see the Avengers with them. But like those are the only movies. The last time my wife and I went out to a movie we wanted to see. It's so long ago. It might be my Big Fat Greek Wedding. When was that?
Joe, was that before you were born? You know that movie?
Not really.
I am not kidding. I do not remember. We just have not done that in forever.
Well, it's out of your realm of consciousness now, so you don't even hear about what the movies are. And then, so the Oscars come out, the nominations come out, there's a list, and you don't even hear about it, you don't pay any attention to it.
Right. I know, like, A Star is Born I was interested in. I've seen the Christofferson, Barbara Streisand version of that movie. Jason Isbell has a song or songs on the soundtrack for that. I'm a fan of him, so I was aware of that, so I know that's nominated. Bohemian Rhapsody is about Freddie Mercury and Queen. I'm interested in that. But none of this got me to a movie theater.
No, you know the music ones.
Right, that's it.
But you're still not going to see them.
No, I'm just going to watch them.
Well, this one's in your house. The one that's supposed to win
Bohemian
is on your phone.
Bohemian Rhapsody's in my house now, too. Like, that was on. I almost watched that when I was sick last week.
Where is it?
Apple
TV. Pay-per-view?
Apple TV, whatever, $5. Okay. Rent it. It was there.
Okay.
Roma is in Spanish, by the way.
It's about a maid in Mexico City in the 70s. In Spanish, and it's the huge favorite to win Best Picture, and there's no box office. Like, it was never in the theater. I think that's cool.
It's a sign of the times, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. I would agree. I would say that. I agree with that. We'll have Rob Ray on at 4 today. Thanks again for the call, Brian. 803-0550, talking a lot of Sabres here this week, trying to figure it out. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Got a couple of pairs of tickets right now up for grabs. Go check out WWE's Live Road to WrestleMania. It takes place Sunday, March 24th at KeyBank Center. Minimum value of this prize is $50. General contest rules apply.
WrestleMania?
Road to WrestleMania.
Road to WrestleMania.
Right. Callers 5 and 6.
Sorry.
We'll each win a pair. 644-9878. Yep.
All right.
I'm done now.
When is it?
Sunday, March 24th.
Coming up.
It's coming up.
You know what day that is? That is my... that's a draft day for me.
Of course it is.
That is a fantasy baseball draft day. The really complicated one where you know a guy in it.
Oh, Llama. Yeah.
Llama?
Yeah, Larry.
Larry? Larry is Llama?
Yeah, Larry the Llama.
There's two Larrys
Larry.
In this thing, so.
Yeah.
And I was going to bring this up because I think a certain thing may happen. I hope you take this well.
Okay.
Well, you've said, like, I would never, like, say this about you until you said it, that when I started getting into fantasy football a couple of years ago, you know, and I think this might have been true about baseball in Strat-O-Matic like 10 years ago. Like, I started to be able to use more information. Like,
sure,
I knew more stuff.
Sure, you knew more. Yeah, that's definitely true.
And
yeah.
So, and you like that. Like,
right.
You know, this is a way to, you also say, I don't want to force myself to pay attention to sports.
Right.
But so I don't really think I'm doing that. But, you know, I was learning more and then it was working for me.
Sure. You've got more material to work with on, like, who, you know, tight ends and wide receivers around the league. You know, you mentioned guys that I've never even heard of.
Yeah, like the Bills might sign Adam Humphries. Adam Humphries is somebody from Tampa Bay that may appeal to them. I mean, I hope he doesn't, because, like, there's just the guy who mentioned war on talent. This is not a guy you sign if you're looking for talent. He's a guy that, you know, maybe he comes to work on time a lot and stuff. And he's not the worst player, but he's not good. Okay. Godwin there, and Tampa Bay was maybe to blame for this too, because, like, he was blocking Godwin, as I saw it. People who were closer to it that I will defer to were saying that.
All right.
So anyway, this new league I joined, it's an expansion team. There are two new teams, and this other person and I were splitting up the team whose owner left today. We were drafting from mm-hmm. that team today, alternating picks. And I picked Rafael Devers, who is the Red Sox third baseman.
Right. He might know.
And I thought, you know, I could ask you about Rafael Devers, but you may not want me to. Like, I don't know. So I predict that all right. I predict that in the course of this season, I'm just going to, stuff like that's going to come out of me because I'm thinking about it, and that's what I'm into in my other time. And, you know, we'll see. Like, maybe that'll be the Red Sox. Maybe Rafael Devers. Rafael Devers is 22.
How much does defense matter? Because I'm under the impression he's not super dependable defensively.
Not at all in rotisserie baseball, except for the fact that he could come out. Like, if his defense is terrible, then the Red Sox will have a problem.
Right.
You know, but it doesn't work against me. There's no errors category in this.
Gotcha. All right.
So I'll be thinking about him and following him, assuming I still have him as the year goes along, and I'll be telling you about that. Maybe, like, you'll sort of broaden your interest. Part of your thing with baseball is being able to get the games.
Right, watch the games. And, you know, that's, you know, I sort of gave up doing that because it just didn't make sense to pay every year to do it when I miss half the summer not being home anyway. So I sort of detached a little, but, you know, I kept tabs on them. I'm always paying attention. You know, it helps when they're good.
Your team.
Yeah, my team. Yeah, right. And I still like baseball. I mean, I'll watch a game.
See, I thought of that too. Like, I know you like it, and you might like to get a little closer to it again. But we'll see.
Probably not like that, though.
Yeah, we'll maybe not. Maybe not. Rob Ray coming up next. The Sabres are in Tampa. Good luck. Tonight, that's a 7:30 game, 6:30 pregame here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.